Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again to talk about issues and illnesses and relative problems that your pets might be experiencing. It's pets and vets. That's what it is. Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna will be on the line with us to answer your questions about pets. And if you have a question about your dog or your cat, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Feel free to email as well. Try to keep them brief but concise and, as detailed as needed, but not too long. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, 800-348-2551. Pets, vets, Dr. Ron Scharf, your call's coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Pets and vets today, here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 grad of Cornell with extensive background in veterinary medicine, as you may surmise. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Generally on these Pets and Vet shows, best plan is to call immediately, get in line, be patient. The lines load up really fast. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And they are first come, first served as well. And if you're emailing, provide as much information as we need. Don't go into great personal detail. And we'll do what we can. Dr. Ron Scharf, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Ray. How are you? It's so nice to speak with you and be with you again.
Yes, and the air conditioning is beginning to cool down Studio A. It was rather warm in here. It was approaching about 200 degrees, but I'm cooling down. And if I nod off, it's not because you're boring, because Lord knows you're not boring. It's just it's a little warm right now, but it's gonna get better. You're now, I understand, like semi-retired, right?
Yes, I am. I'm semi-retired. I am no longer a business owner. However, I still practice.
Oh, really? Well, that's good. So you're going back a little bit, getting a little more free time, and now that the summer's here, it's a good time to do that. This is also a wonderful time for your doggy or your kitty to have some tick bites. This is the time, yeah?
Oh, big time. Major. Yeah. Even my own dog.
Really? And I guess I shouldn't ask for brand names, but what format do you use to protect your animal from ticks and fleas and such?
So the one that I have used for several years and even now, is a combination of one oral product called NexGard for fleas and ticks, which is in a family of medication that got some bad press a few months ago that is not something that I think that people ought to worry about. I think it was a little overblown. In what they call the isoxazoline family. There's also Bravecto is in that family. And for heartworm, I was using Sentinel Spectrum. However, now there is a product called Simparica Trio, which will do all of that in one pill.
Oh, neato.
So I'm going to be switching over to that in the near future when I use up some of the free supply that I got from my former distributors.
Now, I don't have a dog. I never had a dog. I've always been a cat person. How do you get a dog to swallow a pill? Do you give him a little glass of water and just say, go ahead?
Yes, you do not.
No.
They are, most of them, in chewable form. That does not mean that most dogs will take them. It depends on the product. The one thing that is best about the old standby called HeartGuard, which was a protection against heartworm and roundworms and hookworms, is that it was palatable. Most, 98% of dogs would take it as a treat.
Wow.
And most of the products since then do not have such a high success rate, but it depends on which product you're using. So some of them are more palatable than others. My dog will eat the NexGard usually, but not always, but almost never the Sentinel Spectrum. And I have not yet started the Simparica Trio, so I can't speak to you about that. So it depends on the product, and it depends on the dog.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's Pets and Vets. The number is 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here, doctor, and then we'll get to the phones. This one is from James in Bethel, New York. And James writes, 10 days ago, I returned to my job after 14 months away during the COVID. Generally, I am now 10 to 14 hours away from home. For the previous 14 months, my two cats and I were inseparable. My 13-year-old male cat, Mr. Abbott, began showing diffident behavior around the litter box he normally uses when I went back to work. With increasing frequency, he is peeing on the kitchen rug and floor around the box. I got a third box for the two cats, but this has yet to catch on. The days I am home, off work that is, there are no problems with him using the box. The situation is becoming untenable, and the wooden kitchen floor tiles are buckling because of urine moisture. What a descriptive term. Cats and humans are at wit's end. Thanks for your help. That's from James.
James, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's a difficult thing. Urinary problems, or I should say, marking or urinating in the house problems are the most common behavioral problem for a cat, which if your theory that it's related to your being away now after having 14 months been around all the time is correct, it is a behavioral problem. But no matter what, it always behooves you to rule out a physical disorder. No matter how, you always want to do your analysis and sometimes even an x-ray and a blood test to make sure that it's not a physical cause, because otherwise you're going in the way wrong direction and you're trying a whole lot of measures which won't address the problem. So you got to go to your vet. You got to discuss it. Get the cats examined, or at least the one cat. Feel the bladder. That's the veterinarian to feel the bladder.
Right.
Get a urine sample if necessary. Do a culture and sensitivity in case there's a bacterial infection, although that's more of a dog thing than a cat thing. And then just make sure that there's no stones, there's no crystals, there's no infection, etc. Then you're kind of narrowing down the case to, yes, maybe it's behavioral, and in which case you have to start thinking in that direction. And you want to do a bunch of things, and sometimes it's a little too lengthy to go into on the phone. However, it's basically you have to eradicate every iota of reminder cue for the cat that, oh yeah, I peed here before and that was a good thing, so I'm going to do it again. And usually that means some chemical neutralization, like an enzymatic thing, as opposed to just scrubbing it and, you know, spraying some perfume kind of stuff over it. They'll know that it was there in the first place. And if it's on your floor, depending upon what kind of floor you got, you might have your work cut out for you. Then you can do some things with the litter. You want to provide one more box than the number of cats that you have.
Which he did.
And some. Oh, okay.
Yep.
You want to provide a litter that does not have a scent or a perfume, and that's not clay that has a dust in the air kind of thing. So the self-clumping litters that don't have a scent are generally recognized to be the best. Mm-hmm. There is a product that I often recommend to people to add to the litter to make it that much more attractive to use, called Cat Attract.
Ah.
I'm sure there are other ones. And in case it's a friction problem between the cats, well, then you could use the pheromone that I've mentioned on the show many times, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, called Feel Away.
Yeah.
And there are some other factors that you, or measures that you could take that would address it, but that's a start right there.
Fair enough. All right, this is another email, and then we will. We only have about 2 minutes before the break. Then we'll take a quick break and hit the phones in earnest. 800-348-2551 is our phone number. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us, and it's Pets and Vets today. This email from DJ in Mountainville, New York. My friend has had two female littermates since kittenhood. They're now 8 years old. They don't get along. He wants me to adopt the troublemaker. She would be the only cat in our home. No dogs, no young kids. She has been on buspirone for some time, and we would like to wean her off it. Do you think that's advisable? If so, how do we go about it? Ron Scharf.
Yike. So two litter mates that do not get along, so it's sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to figure out why. I mean, there you go with your feel away, etc. If the caller or the emailer is willing to take that cat, then there may not need to be any need if the whole problem was just between two cats and now there's no two cats.
Right.
Then that the littermate that's having the problem may not have the problem anymore because they don't have an enemy to deal with. So that might just take care of the whole problem right there. But I don't know, Ray, did you catch what that cat with the problem, like why is it on buspirone in the first place?
No idea. No, it doesn't
say.
But they would just like to wean her off it.
Okay. So I have more experience with the antidepressants that are called SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac and generic Prozac.
Yeah.
It's called fluoxetine. The Buspar, I don't have personally any experience using in animals. I've heard of it being done.
Okay.
You know, extrapolating from the SSRIs, you want to wean them off stuff very gradually. Whether that's also true of the Buspar, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I would do it gradually just to be on the safe side, really, you know, over the course of many weeks kind of thing.
All right, fair enough. Let's take a quick break. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's Pets and Vets today. To the phones we will go in a moment. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. It's Pets and Vets today. Ron Scharf joins us, and Sandy is in Rotterdam. Hello, hello, Sandy. You're on.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Yes.
Yes.
I am calling. I have recently acquired an elderly Chihuahua who is in need of some dental work. I don't think he's been to a vet. Maybe never.
Okay.
Anyway, I also have noticed he has occasional seizures. So every vet I've talked to, you know, he has to be
anesthetized.
To
Have
his teeth extracted. And I'm a little worried about them putting him under with his seizure history, given the fact that the seizures, when he has them, can last like 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
Wow. That's a lot.
I know. I've done a lot of research on this, and they don't happen often, but when they do, they're long-lasting.
Okay.
With no ill effects, by the way.
Well, that you know.
So,
okay.
Right, exactly.
All right, so what's your question?
Will it be safe? I mean, to put him under anesthesia to have his dental work done.
Okay.
Well, that's my concern.
Yeah, no, I get it. Dr. Scharf.
So, Sandy, first of all, I want to applaud your, first of all, taking a new, older Chihuahua as a pet. That is great, and especially since you know that work needs to be done. So bravo on that count. Number two, the teeth are personally an extremely important thing in my mind. I think that dental health is very undervalued, especially in pets. And it is a major quality of life factor. So many people would say, in light of the seizures, that you should avoid any elective, quote-unquote, procedure that may precipitate another seizure. I would disagree, okay, because it's a risk-benefit ratio. What is the risk of another seizure being precipitated by the medication compared to what is the benefit to addressing those teeth? Now, the teeth are, I would assume, providing that dog, especially if it's never had its teeth clean, let alone have been to a vet at all, that dog's quality of life is way worse than it could be otherwise. So I think that the benefit of getting rid of all those rotten teeth that are hurting the dog, okay, outweighs the risk of the anesthesia because there are certain sedatives, tranquilizers, and anesthetics that are pro-seizurogenic or or the opposite. You know, there are some that might precipitate a seizure more than others, like ketamine or etilazole or a few others. On the other hand, there are some that they themselves could be somewhat anticonvulsant. Okay, so a veterinarian knows which ones are better and which ones are not. So, for instance, things like the benzodiazepines, like Valium or Alprazolam, are anti-seizure medications, and they might be used when someone's got a seizure going on, and that's all you got. You give them that, and it could help big time. So that is an example of something that would be very beneficial to use in this kind of situation. And I would guess that most veterinarians use a benzo as like midazolam, which is in people call Versed, as part of their normal pre-med or pre-anesthetic regimen. So you want to stay with the things that are anti-seizure, seizure-regenic, what a medical person would say, and mm-hmm. that would be one of them. And then the anesthetics, other than ketamine and etilazole, are mostly pretty good. So as far as seizures are concerned, I would take the risk. There's never going to be zero risk, but I think bottom line, Sandy, is that the benefit of taking care of those teeth is way outweighed or does outweigh the risk of precipitating a seizure. And were there to be a seizure, the veterinarians right there have things that could be given to counteract it on the off chance that it's needed. If you really want to take no chances, you can go to a neurologist and say, what do you think, and have the dog looked at. But I have to say that they would say, most neurologists cannot make a firm diagnosis without doing an MRI. So you're talking big bucks. So I would not feel bad if you don't go to a neurologist, but I like to outline all options for my clients and yourself.
Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf joins us on Pets and Vets today. And let's go to lovely, beautiful, is it Oneida or Oneonta? They're both beautiful, but I can't tell. The spelling's odd. Judy, where are you calling from? Hello, Judy. Are you there? Are you, in fact?
I'm here, yes. It's Oneonta.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I love Oneonta. What a great place. You're on. Go ahead.
Okay, I am calling about Lily. She is our 8-year-old, fairly overweight Jack Russell. She was recently diagnosed with Cushing's, and she also had a high liver enzyme, ALP, was quite high. So she's been prescribed both Denimarin, 225 milligrams once a day, as well as the Vetoryl once a day. Mm-hmm. So my question is, she needs to take the Denimarin on an empty stomach, and she needs to take the Vetoryl with food. So in the beginning here, we've been giving her the Vetoryl in the morning with her breakfast and the Denimarin in the afternoon a couple hours before dinner, just because we thought the Vetoryl was the one most likely to cause serious side effects. We wanted a longer period of daylight hours to observe her. So I'm just wondering, is that okay? And yeah. How much, I've been smearing a little bit of peanut butter on the Denimarin to get her to take it without having to shove my finger halfway down her throat.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if that's okay.
Judy, great questions. The answer is yes. You're doing it perfectly. The Denimarin, in my understanding, is given on an empty stomach, not because it's dangerous to not do that, but because it enhances the absorption. Okay, so in other words, food in the stomach would make the absorption not quite as optimal. But there's no danger to not doing it like that, okay? Number one. Number two, the Vetoryl, like you're doing it after breakfast, is perfect, okay? The peanut butter, before I talk about that, it's not that big a deal, but I am concerned about that ALT, and I'll tell you why. The typical
it's ALP, P as in Paul, is in the beautiful Alp Mountains.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
The ALP, which is alkaline phosphatase, is always elevated in a Cushingoid animal. But the ALT, which is specific to the liver, okay, is only mildly elevated in your typical Cushingoid. When I thought that you were talking about the ALT being extremely high, I was thinking that there was a second problem going on in the liver, and I was going to look into that prior to talking about the peanut butter, okay? Mm. The peanut butter, I don't think it's that big a deal. I'm sorry?
She said sure.
Thanks.
But the peanut butter, my only problem with the peanut butter is that the dog's already overweight, okay? And that can, depending upon how much you're given, it could add to that, but not in a horrible way. I mean, if you just cut back on most of the food that the dog does not need, and then you're giving a teaspoon or a half a teaspoon of peanut butter, it's for a good cause. It's for a worthy cause. That vet oral is the way to go. The way to go for Cushing's, and I think you got it. I think you got it, Judy. Sounds good.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm just smearing the outside with just the tiniest, tiniest amount. Her appetite is huge, so she's barely questioning it, but she would question a completely bare, naked pill. Yeah.
The huge appetite is Cushing's. And when you get it under control with oral, it won't be as huge an appetite. So then it might be even harder to get the dog to eat the Denimarin. But listen, the Denimarin, Judy, is not something that will cure a liver problem. It's something that is a supportive measure, okay? It's got two products which are not even pharmaceuticals. One is an herb called milk thistle, and the other is an antioxidant called FAM-E. So they're fairly benign, not fairly, they are benign supplements and not even considered pharmaceuticals. You can give them over the counter.
Well, so, Judy, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's Pets and Vets Today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And now we go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I am here.
Okay.
Are you there?
Well, yes.
Okay. My cat, in the last 2 weeks, got in a scuffle with somebody. I don't know what happened, but he had his right hip punctured, I guess. And it got an abscess on it, and we were just taking him into the vet when, you know, it popped. And so I washed it, and I put peroxide on it, but I just wonder if it's apt to come back.
Uh-huh.
So, Lynn, it's not apt to come back unless there is a foreign body in there, okay, which is not likely. But you don't know what happened. There was a scuffle that was you did not see, I assume. If it was from another cat, which is a common cause of abscesses in cats, then if drainage is not only happening but continues to happen beyond all the bad stuff getting out, the pus and all that, and the cat's on an antibiotic, that ought to be fine. On the other hand, if the cat got punctured by something that left something behind, you know, something from, you know, a branch or whatever, then as long as the foreign body's in there, it's not going to get better, okay? That, like I said, is unlikely. If the cat's got drainage, if the hole is kept open for 5 days or however long, and they're on a good antibiotic, should be fine. Hot compresses are very good, too, you know, with an antiseptic like Betadine.
Uh-huh, okay. Does an abscess like that affect the bone at all in cats?
Only if whatever punctured the cat reached the bone.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much for your help, and thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Lynn, thanks so much. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Pets and Vets Today. Ron Scharf joins us. We go to Ashford, Connecticut. Terry, you're on. Or not. Hello, Terry. Are you there? Okay. Oh, hello, Terry. Okay. Well, I seeing subject matter from Terry, it might not be the best for radio anyway. Let's move on at James and Rhinebeck. James.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is sort of a follow-up call on the last one about Cushing's disease. My dog has been, who's elderly, going on 12 years old, has been diagnosed by not one but two vets with atypical Cushing's disease. And because of her age and because both of them seem to think that the treatment for atypical Cushing's disease, the drug treatment, the chemo, whatever you want to call it, is a bit too punishing, they have recommended that I put her on melatonin and linen, the melatonin given twice a day, the linen given once a day, if I'm even pronouncing that correctly. But to be frank, we've had her on this for months. And by the way, the chief symptom and the thing that made us investigate this is hair loss. First, she lost her undercoat, and now she's losing patches of her overcoat. I'm sorry to say that the melatonin and the other supplement haven't really done the trick. Even though I was told not to expect anything for at least 4 months, any progress, it's been over 4 months that we've been giving her that. So I guess my question is, was I correctly informed that the regular drug treatment for this disease would be too harsh for my dog to endure?
Dr. Sharp.
Okay. Yes. So this thing, it's good to have two people agreeing that it's atypical Cushing's, James. And there's only one place in the country, there's only one lab that will do that for you. I think it's University of Tennessee. I'm about 90% certain. And they provide an instruction sheet, which is very helpful. And it does mention the lignin and et cetera. I have to admit that although I've seen plenty of Cushing's, you don't see as much atypical Cushing's as that. So I know enough about the lignin, the melatonin. The question that I would need to research that I don't have off the top of my head for my little brain is whether or not the regular medication for regular Cushing's that she just talked about, the vet oral, might be an option. Now, there are alternatives to that as well, which may have not as much side effects. The vet oral is a potentially risky drug. You've got to be real careful with it. And through the years, people have tried other things, and some of them are said to be working, some not. There's one called Deprinol and a few others. So it's a very complicated thing, and I am sorry that I cannot say off the top of my head whether or not the vet oral would be something that you could try on an atypical Cushing's. I would imagine yes, but I'm not sure.
Well, I appreciate letting me know and also being candid about what you might not know off the top of your head. I should
go
let
to,
you know that.
James, sorry to interrupt you. Go to University of Tennessee, Google it, and Google atypical Cushing's, and see maybe you can get that list of instructions yourself, or ask your vet, because they usually send it with the lab results. And it's very helpful, and you could scan it yourself and see what it says.
James, thanks a lot for the call. What's the difference between typical Cushing's and atypical Cushing's?
Sex hormones.
Okay, now, what does melatonin specifically, I mean, hey, you have trouble going to sleep, the doctor will say, hey, try some melatonin. It makes you go to sleep. What does it do for Cushing's in a dog?
Okay. So I can only guess at the answer to your very good question. Melatonin is also a hormone.
Right.
Most all of the hormones in the body are controlled by the pituitary. That's like the master cylinder, okay?
Yeah.
The pituitary controls everything, the adrenal glands, which is Cushing's, the thyroid, etc. I would guess that the melatonin would provide the pituitary with a feedback mechanism that might have it slow down the stimulation to the adrenals, okay?
Uh-huh.
That's just the best I got.
Okay, well, Dr. Ron Sharf is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop, it's Pets and Vets, and we will be right back. Thank you. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And it's Dr. Ron Scharf with us today for this Pets and Vets edition. A couple of emails here, Ron, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Ernie in Scotia. I have a 12-year-old cat who has been an only cat her whole life, and I'm getting a new kitten. I'm concerned about how the acclimation process will go. I plan to keep the kitten in a separate room for a while and do some supervised introduction when I think they're ready. Is this a good plan? What other advice do you have? That's from Ernie in Scotia.
I think it's a great plan, Ernie, even though I don't know if you're listening. I think that you want it sounds like promising, although cat personalities and interactions are anyone's guess how it's going to work out, okay? How the chemistry is going to be. So they could be a little tetchy, but when you're introducing like this little pipsqueak to a cat that's not too old, okay, it gives the, what I call the incumbent cat, an opportunity to teach this little upstart correct boundaries and correct ways to behave.
Yeah.
Okay? And most cats are really good at that. There are some cats that might be of a timid nature in the first place, and then the kitten grows into a more extroverted and, acting out kind.
Yeah.
And then the growing cat starts getting dominant over the incumbent cat, and that could be a little difficult depending upon, exactly what happens. But I'm thinking, Ernie, that your cat, your 12-year-old cat, is not very old and ought to be able to teach the new cat the rules of the road. And that is really good. I think it's almost the most promising way of two cats getting along is when there's a really young 2-month, 3-month-old cat or kitten and another cat who's not way old or sick, and let them thresh it out on their own. They do a better job socializing the cat to themselves than we humans do socializing the cat to us.
All right, fair enough. This one is from Patrick in North Adams. Subject heading, strange cat behavior. My cat, Tubby, has a weird habit of chewing holes in cloth. Blankets and socks seem to be his favorite. When I first brought him home, I would catch him eating dryer lint. He has plenty of appetite for food still. He's also slimmed down from 28 pounds when I first adopted him 2 years ago to 22 pounds. Oh, still svelte, are you? Should I be worried or just learn to live with Swiss cheese blankets? That's from Patrick in North Adams.
Yeah. So, Patrick, good luck with trying to do behavior modification on a cat. It's not that it's impossible, but how do you teach them don't chew other than removing the cloth, if possible, from the cat? So, in other words, closing bedroom doors and just seeing what the cat migrates over to and try to eliminate access to those things as well.
Yeah.
You could try some aversive measures, which, sometimes can work, sometimes can't. You catch them in the act, and you have a powerful squirt gun, or you got the 5 pennies in the can that you shake if whenever they do something you don't want them to do, or a noise that they don't like a strong hiss. But you got to be catching them in the act for that.
Yeah.
So you can't retire and then devote your life to monitoring the cat. So I would just try to avoid the cat having access to those places that'll induce that kind of behavior. And I'm not sure if I got any other magic bullets than that.
Okay. Well, this one is from David. And David writes, I have a 15-year-old Abyssinian. She has just started leaking urine for the past 6 weeks. Eats well, uses the litter box, little less energy than usual. Urinalysis and blood work shows high white blood count, which was treated for infection, but also high creatine, Bun, and Amy. Have switched to a Hill's Kidney Care diet. Any thoughts?
Yes, many thoughts. A 15-year-old cat is commonly afflicted by chronic kidney disease.
Yeah.
Okay. It's almost hard to find a cat that does not have any of that than a cat that does. I mean, they almost outnumber the ones that don't have it.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is treat the infection until you know that it is taken care of. And sometimes it's hard to tell because a urinalysis is not as good about showing an infection as the gold standard, which is a culture and sensitivity done on a sample of urine that is gotten in what is called an aseptic manner, meaning it's not voided, because if they pee it out, then it's passing a contaminated urethra and skin and hair, etc. Or if you're getting it out of a vessel, then how clean is the vessel? The best way is to get a sample for an aseptic sample of urine for a culture and sensitivity is with a needle through the skin, preferably clipped and swabbed with alcohol. And it's something that is commonly done. It sounds aggressive.
Yeah.
It sounds invasive.
Yeah.
And it is invasive.
Yeah.
But it is done all the time.
Okay.
So a urinalysis is great. The culture and sensitivity is definitive. Okay. And so that will take care of the infection. That's the easy part. The elevated creatinine means that there is likely some chronic kidney disease. Now, I only say likely because you don't know that it'll stay elevated after the infection's gotten rid of, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely want to check that they've had a long enough course of antibiotic medication and then recheck the creatinine just to make sure. It's not likely that it's going to get better, but it's surely possible, okay?
All right.
So if it gets better, then you might be done. If the creatinine does not get better, then the Hill's diet that you mentioned, there are other companies as well, have diets which are made for cats with chronic kidney disease. And there's various things in it which makes that beneficial. But I will say, no matter what company you use, it is always better to use canned food than dry food. Some cats, a minority of cats, have a preference for dry food, in which case they do make the prescription food in a dry form. But the canned food has more moisture and gives a more dilute urine. And the more dilute the urine, the less likely it for a problem like crystals or et cetera. So the prescription food is good in the absence of all infection.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some other measures you could take, but that is the single biggest one, just to put them on the right diet, preferably canned over dry.
Dr. Ron Scharf joins us. It's Pets at Vets Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jane is in Columbia County. Hello, Jane. Ah. Jane has also fallen asleep. Hello, Jane. Are you there?
G'day.
You know, Ron, it's been one of those weeks. Hello? Oh, for Pete's sake. Yeah, so, Ron, we did a show earlier this week, and this was a first. It was on Medical Monday, and you know, the person was on hold for about 12 minutes, 13 minutes. Just, it's kind of a normal amount of time to be on the show. We go, let's go to so-and-so in Dutchess. The dude is snoring. He was snoring when we went to the phone. And that's a new one, even for me. And let's go to Mary Jo in New Paltz. Are you awake? Hello.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're on.
Just calling in. I have a four-year-old miniature pincher. She had a spinal injury about a year ago. Kind of unclear what happened, but we were told with the small breed dogs, sometimes they can have a disc blow just kind of jumping off the couch, something minor. So amazingly, we had an MRI and the whole nine yards. Amazingly enough, over time, she's able now to walk again. We did a lot of physical therapy with her at home, and she had a lot of acupuncture done.
Ooh, excellent.
So the remaining issue that we have is that she still has a bit of an incontinence issue. And I walk her about every 2 hours, but she just doesn't seem to have the ability to hold it. And it's particularly an issue on the overnight, and I have a theory that she's just really relaxed, and then there's this issue of, like, you know, her not being able to hold on to her stuff. So I'm just wondering if there's anything more that we could do to be supporting her healing process, or is this just kind of like it is what it is, and we either have to go for dog diapers or whatever?
So it is. It could be an is what it is, but it could also not be an is what it is, because you want to make sure that there's not something else going on. So almost obviously, a urinalysis just to make sure there's no urinary tract infection, okay, and blood work to make sure that there's no condition happening that could contribute to leaking Mary Jo. I mean, there's diabetes. There is Cushing's, as we've spoken about a couple times already this hour. So you want to rule out things that do not have to do with the spine. I'm not saying it's likely that it's something else. I'm just saying that you want to rule out other possible contributors to the leakage, okay? Number one. Number two, there is a condition in dogs which is not that uncommon that is an incontinence that often will respond to one or the other of the following two medications. One is called Proin, which is P-R-O-I-N. That's a trade name for the, let's see, the generic is Propin. Oh, I'm blanking. Okay. But anyway, Proin. Or even estrogen, you know, it's called often an estrogen-responsive urinary incontinence. So it's not that big a deal just putting the animal onto a trial course of Proim. Now, the estrogen has more potential for risk, obviously. So I would not be as cavalier doing that as a trial course as the Proin. The Proin is not that big a deal. So if you've ruled out endocrine problems that could contribute to the dog making too much urine and leaking, and you've ruled out the incontinence that I mentioned, then you want to get back to, I would almost think about Mary Jo going back to the acupuncture, because you could do acupuncture not only for the spine, but you could also do acupuncture for the urinary tract, okay, as far as kidneys and bladder, okay, etc. So they in the first course, I don't know, how many treatments of acupuncture did it
get? It was pretty intensive. We did a few months, and we were going weekly, and this was at the New Paltz Animal Hospital. Fantastic care. Cool. You know, and then I think the doctor, you know, we had just kind of reached a limit at that point. But it might be worth revisiting. Yeah.
Yes. It might be. First, Mary Jo, you are great as far as going so far to take care of your Minpin. That is really sweet. The acupuncture that I've done has been very helpful with invertebral disc disease more than any other condition, okay? It's very good with arthritis too, but some of the disc problems, it's like a miracle. I've had dogs come in unable to walk at all, and then they walk out. So not that that's common, but it's
right. Well, that's kind of what happened with our girl. She completely lost use of her whole hindquarters, and it really felt miraculous when over time she was able to get it back, because she's a very spirited animal. Yeah.
You know, an invertebral disc disease, Mary Jo, will usually, not always, but usually show up on an X-ray. So I'd be curious, do we know for sure that it was that? Because they can also get things such as a fibrocartilaginous embolus. So that's how a little piece of fibrocartilage makes its way into a blood vessel in the spine, and it'll cut off the blood supply, and then that's got a variable course, and it sometimes does get better. I would go back to the acupuncture just to eliminate all possibilities. You may not get any more improvement, but you may, you know. So I would definitely think it's worth it, but after ruling out the other non-spinal causes.
Mary Jo, thanks so much for the call. Now, I am told that Jane in Columbia County has come back to her phone, and let's find out if it's correct. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I am, Ray.
Hello, you're on.
Hi.
Welcome.
Dr. Sharp, is he there?
Oh, yes.
I am.
Hi, Dr. Sharp. I have a 16-year-old stray. I've had this stray cat for almost 15 years. She's 16 then, I think, Holly. And she's so old. I had to have her shaved and get all the her old. She's a long-haired black cat. And she's had dandruff ever since I got her. And nobody can seem to fix the situation. And then she's all shaved now for the summer. And the dandruff is just, it's just horrible. It's just terrible. Nice. Is there any way to fix it?
So that may be, Jane, hard to say because, you know, plenty of people have dandruff.
Right.
And how do you fix it? Well, you could use Head and Shoulders, but you're not necessarily fixing it. You're just trying to manage it. So there could be a seborrhea that may respond to certain supplements and certain medications. And I use the word medications loosely because they're more supplements or, you know, certain kinds of oils and certain kinds of shampoos and things like that that might make it a little better. You do
she
want to...
She won't take... I can't put any flaxseed oil down her.
Oh,
I
man.
Can't put it on the food.
Well, I'm thinking more of omega-3 fatty acids. The flaxseed is good, but the omega-3s... the omega-3s and 6s in the right proportion are better from fish, okay? So mm-hmm. you might want to look for other sources of omega-3 fatty acids. So, but that's an example. That's a perfect example of something that's not a pharmaceutical, but it's a supplement that oftentimes helps. So between that mm-hmm. and certain kinds of bathing, but you also, I hate to sound like a broken record, want to rule out potential physical causes because hormonal disease can cause a whole bunch of stuff. If, you know, if it was a dog, the first thing I'd think about is hypothyroidism. Cats don't get that unless you over-medicate a hyperthyroid cat. But there are other endocrine diseases that can contribute to it. So I'm not thinking it's likely that there's an endocrine problem, Jane, but if you want to be exhaustive and cover all bases, you know, it's always good to rule out a potential physical cause that might be something you can address. Mm-hmm. And then the omega-3 fatty acids and the special shampoos and et cetera are very good to do.
How much oil will it, how will I get that oil in her?
So it comes in various forms, and there are gelatin football-shaped little pills that you sometimes can puncture and spill on the food or hide it in a pill pocket or get it in a liquid form that you just have to kind of convince the cat to take. Not fun, I know. If you can't get it into the cat, then at some point you want to stop getting into such an adversarial relationship with your cat just for the sake of using a supplement that may not even help.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to use your good judgment about when to call it quits for cats.
She's 16 years old. How long? I've lived with her dandruff for 15 years.
Oh, man.
I mean, brushing it doesn't do any good.
It's a little late to start now, Jane, don't you think?
Like Ray is saying, after 15 years, you know, it's kind of like a done deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
just let it
be. The brushing is a great idea, no matter what, whether even if there is no dandruff, the brushing is always a nice idea. Okay,
yeah.
It stimulates the skin. What the dandruff is, Jane, is just an over cycling of the body, the skin getting rid of dead epithelial cells. That's basically what it is.
And
it's doing it too much.
Jane, the key is just don't have your cat wear any dark sweaters or anything, and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, only a
few. That's right.
Hey, listen, we're done. Hey, Ron, well done. Thank you for being here, sir. Enjoy your semi-retirement. And do you golf at all?
I have golfed. I would not say that I do golf because it's kind of pathetic.
It's not too relaxing if you're terrible at it. I know the feeling. Hey, man, we're done.
I might take it up.
Hey, have a great summer, and I'm sure we'll talk to you before
Thank
the end
you.
Of it. Thank you for being
you too,
here.
Roy.
Support
Ray,
Roy.
It's a pleasure.
Call me anything you want. At least you're awake, which is more than I can say for most of the listeners. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing design, production, and project management for trade shows, museum exhibits, special events, and custom interiors. Your partner for a custom experience, EmpireExhibits.com. And Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, Red Hook. By appointment only for private, one customer in the salon at a time reservations with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette. StudioKTM.com. Well, there you go. You got through another hour of Vox Pop, and God bless you for it. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Ron Scharf. And thanks to Jessica Denyeau for answering the calls today. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back Deanna Fox. Stand by now for the Capital Connection.